Cisco is pleased to present a panel discussion on the changing state of public sector collaboration and associated operations as part of the Future of Public Sector Workforce and Workplace Sustainability series on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. I'm Tom Temin. Our guests this morning are Gerald Charles, Jr. He is Executive Advisor in the Public Sector of Cisco Systems. Dave McClure, Associate Administrator of the GSA's Office of Citizen Services and Communications. And Afia Asamoah, Special Assistant to the Principal Deputy Commissioner at the Food and Drug Administration. Great to have you all with us.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right, this whole idea of open government, the Open Government Directive, has produced for agencies a lot of work to do. They have to produce plans for open government, but they also have to really become open and transparent in a lot of ways. Let's start with you, Gerald. How has this affected work, do you think, this whole issue of openness and transparency?
We think it has a great effect today because as we've entered the knowledge economy versus kind of last century, in the industrial era, work has changed and even what work is. If you think about the four different generations that are in the workforce, if you think about the use of technology that's in the workforce today, if you think about just collaboration, kind of defined as a big C, you know, what does that mean? What does that mean across agencies, which goes to the heart of, you know, openness and transparency in government? Just think about what's happening with social media and Web 2.0. All those things are significantly impacting how government works, you know, what the workforce looks like and what citizens are actually expecting from their services and delivery. We think it's actually an incredible opportunity because there's an opportunity to really increase performance, you know, across a number of different areas.
And Dave McClure, at GSA, you have initiated a lot of projects within GSA, but you've also deployed something throughout the government with openness and transparency. And so that has had some effect on work. Tell us what's been going on.
Yeah, definitely. I think it's affecting work inside government in terms of how we do our work inside the baseball arena of government itself. And it also is affecting how we interact with citizens. So we are standing up some collaboration tools, for example, that can help agencies enter into this new workspace of working collaboratively, integrating processes, using technology to actually improve not only traditional workflow, but just the way in which work is being communicated and exercised throughout the organization in a very dynamic way. Externally, it means going to citizens and delivering services on their terms, not the government's terms. So Gerald mentioned social media, Web 2.0. We are having to take government information out to citizens in organized social networks in ways that were simply not in existence just 5 years ago.
And Afia Asamoah at FDA, there's been a lot of activity there. FDA has gotten a much bigger mandate under the administration. And also you have done some transparency initiatives like those 45 dashboards of performance at FDA. I actually have checked some of them out.
Excellent.
And so there's been a big change in the work structure there at FDA because of transparency. Tell us some of those things we need to know.
Commissioner Hamburg actually sees the openness and transparency that President Obama announced on his first full day of government as an opportunity, for FDA to provide the public with more information about our work, about the drugs they take, the devices they use, the food they eat. They need to know about the products that they use, and also opportunity for us to be more accessible and provide information in an accessible fashion. So in direct response to Obama's commitment to open and transparent government, to the Department of Health and Human Services commitment to transparency and openness in government, Commissioner Hamburg put together an internal task force to address ways in which you could provide more useful and understandable information to the public. As part of that, in early January, we launched a webpage called FDA Basics, which provides basic information about the agency. That has gotten over 160,000 unique visitors since its launch in early January, and as well as 4,000 comments from the public that we're using to improve the site. And last month, we launched FDA Track, which is our performance management system. And it's an opportunity for people to get a better sense of what the agency does every day to improve the public health, as well as using feedback from the public to kind of improve the work that we do every day.
Okay, so everyone's has some different work to do as a result of transparency. And Gerald Charles, at Cisco, you've developed a concept which I think is pretty fascinating, and that's the idea of workplace sustainability in support of all these initiatives. And I guess really that has a life of its own, because work was changing in the workplace even before the open government directive came down. So explain what workplace sustainability is and how it also might be affecting the response to open government.
Yes, thank you. I call it workforce and workspace sustainability, and I'll actually emphasize the workspace in a minute. But if you really think about what's been happening as work has evolved over the years, today our workforce and our customers, our citizens, are incredibly mobile. So mobility is much more of a characteristic. Both Dave and Afia also talked about collaboration and how we share information. So collaboration is actually a fundamental piece of it. Our work environment itself, you know, our buildings, our real estate has been very inefficient. We're looking for ways to use that more efficiently since we're so mobile. So a smart workplace, or the Smart Buildings Initiative, in fact, also something in Dave's organization, which is going on. And then this whole concept, again, of kind of Web 2.0 and social media, that your trusted communities or your trusted online communities, which also goes back to something Afia was saying about sharing information, both back and forth between the public, you know, and the government agencies. All those really are characteristics which are now defining work. And we've encapsulated that in this concept of workforce and workspace sustainability. That really captures green and being more efficient and effective in use of energy, IT, greenhouse gas emissions. It also takes into account our smart workplaces, which it's not just about the building, it's also about the work environment itself and recognizing that we're more productive when we're in a more productive setting. Lastly, I'd say bringing into the concept of workspace, our work isn't defined by kind of the factory floor or the ivory tower that we go into. Our work is wherever we are. So generally, we're not in one place at one time. We may come to the office, but we're throughout the building or the campus. We're visiting with citizens. We're visiting with our suppliers. So it's really about our workspace and not so much our workplace. So this overall model is workforce and workspace sustainability.
And Dave, you've really had two separate careers in the federal government, separated by a stint in the private sector. And a while ago, when you and I first kind of entered the workforce, there were things called typing pools, and you got your messages on pink pieces of paper when you went out to lunch, and there were no such things as cell phones. I remember when, you know, the Selectric typewriter was, ooh, I'm high tech now. And so how does it look to you in the federal government in terms of the way people work now versus when we started?
Tom, I think I don't remember the pink slips and the IBM typewriters. I think that was before me. I'm just kidding, of course. I do remember those days. Every 5 years, I think the technology is taking our ability to work smarter to new levels. We're now connected 24 hours a day. Interesting statistic, when the government was shut down for Snowmageddon, you know, there were some statistics produced that showed how many government workers, even though they were officially off, were actually online doing work. And we had a high percentage in GSA. I think we're just in an era where people are connected and need connectivity all the time in order to be able to do the jobs they do. They're not sitting at desk and they're not tied physically to technology. So I think the mobility that we expect with our technologies, our ability to deliver services when and where our customers want it, our ability to enable a workforce that also needs some mobility and also needs flexibility in terms of where it's working. We no longer have to have people, you know, handcuffed to desk in order to get the work of government done. So it's a completely different environment. Every 5 years, we're going in new directions.
And Afia, at the FDA, of course, there's been a big physical move of the agency to new headquarters, and some award-winning, I think, green buildings have happened there. Yep. And also the mission has been evolving, and yet there's a legacy of being a fairly stovepiped agency with the different food part and the drug part, mm-hmm. and within those there have been several stovepipes. So how has work been changing as a result of the confluence of open government, of the physical move, and of the general, I would say, march toward breaking down stovepipes?
Right. I think technology has been extremely helpful both internally at FDA as well as externally. Externally, through the Transparency Initiative, we thought that technology would be a means for us to engage with more people, more stakeholders that are interested in the things we do, but have not typically been engaged in the process. So as a first step, we launched our first ever blog, the FDA Transparency Blog. And that was an opportunity for us to get information about what we're doing, doing to the public, and also allowing folks that typically don't engage and give comments to the agency an opportunity for us to hear from those folks too. And we found that to be extremely, extremely helpful and beneficial to the work that we've been doing. We initially planned to put it up for 2 months, and it was so successful. We're keeping it going, and it's going on today. In terms of internally, it's helped that we are all moving to the same place, but we have used technology in the aspect that it's really important for us to take a holistic view in terms of the work that we do. So even though we have a center of foods and a center of drugs, a lot of the issues we deal with are cross-cutting. And so technology has allowed the agency to get the relevant folks together around the table to do the work that we need to do to promote the public health.
And speaking of blogs, I mean, Gerald, a blog to me indicates something bigger that's happened in work, and that is work is no longer 9 to 5. But it can take place around the clock. And you've examined that. And what you found, I think, is that the work environment is much more complex as a result. So what are the complexities? What are the challenges of it? But also, what are the opportunities in the way we work now that's not just 9 to 5? I mean, blogging takes place sometimes at 2 a.m.
Tom, you really hit that point very much. You know, we're finding that it's virtual, it's mobile, it's global. And so that paradigm of 9 to 5 doesn't exist anymore. It's almost, you know, we say maybe 7 a.m. to 10 p.m. Now, of course, you're not working all that time, well, at least not most days, but your day almost starts from the time you wake up and almost reach over to that BlackBerry, that PDA, or your cell phone, and start looking at text messages or email or whatever else. And before you even get out of your house, if you do get out of your house, you may have logged on. And you're checking things on the way to work or to wherever your work location is. While you're in the taxi cab or the car or the train, you're probably listening to voicemail or maybe even an online conference. When you get to work, you're probably in a meeting room, again, someplace on campus, not necessarily in your office. By the time the afternoon hits, you're probably going to a doctor's or dentist appointment or your child's dance recital or ball game. And then when you get home, if you go back home in the evening, you're probably online again, maybe with someone in a different time zone or, you know, with your teams. Now, the blogging aspect that is a part of that is that brings together, again, these trusted online communities. You know, your kind of communities of interest, they're part of how you do work, too. And you're accessing those, you know, anywhere, any place, at any time of the day or night.
And we're going to explore that a little bit further, that whole idea of trusted communities. But, Afia, does that sound like the way you work?
Yes. Although I'd say I think the FDA's work is never done. It feels like it's 24 hours a day. We have a global mandate. And so technology does allow us to communicate with folks across the world because, as you know, the products that we regulate kind of come from everywhere, and it's very important for us to be connected in that fashion.
That's right. And this year, I guess really last year, FDA deployed its first people to China. So you
yes.
have people, what, 12, 13 time zones away?
Right. We have people in China. We have people in India. We have people based in Mexico, Mexico City. So we truly are becoming a more global entity because that's the nature of the world now. Our technology has helped facilitate that.
And Dave, from your perch at GSA, you have a good cross-government look at all this. Is that pretty much how it is now in working for the federal government?
Well, I think so. I think we've had a lot of focus on technology. We've had a lot of focus on connecting people. I think we've solved a lot of that. There's still some issues, but we're definitely a connected workforce. I think what this tells us, Tom, is that we're moving more to an environment that's very focused on knowledge management, where it's the analytics, it's the information of work that's becoming extremely important in government, as opposed to the rote process or day-to-day operational aspects, which, again, need attention. But this frees up time for problem solving, effective service delivery, and actually taking information and weaving it together across networks in a way that are very, very effective compared to the way we used to operate.
And that gets us to the concept of one of the components that you have in the sustainability model, and that's confidence of work, which has a lot of effect on collaboration. So explain that whole idea for us.
If I can, if I could also just follow up on a comment that Dave and Afi had also made about kind of knowledge and their global workforce. A lot of our research also showed that we work as teams now much more than we did as individuals. So whereas as recently as 10 or 15 years ago, we might only work 15% of the time, now research shows that 85% of the time we're working with two or more people. So the knowledge management, the global footprint, our teams, that whole collaboration theme is so heavily, you know, in how we do work, which also then goes back to why the openness and transparency directive are important. With respect to your question on confidence, confidence is really about the level of context and trust that you have in your decision making. So again, as we work together as teams, you know, there's only a certain amount of information or a certain level of confidence you will have in making a decision based upon a piece of paper or an email. As human beings, we rely on all of our senses. And so that eye-to-eye contact that we have, that feel that we really need, that really can speed our trust or the confidence that we have in our decision making. So actually now beginning to understand, you know, confidence is almost a management lever that you can pull, you know, depending upon the individual function, that's now critically important. And that's a key dimension in collaboration and actually being able to manage collaboration.
So Dave, how do you build trust in online collaboration where sometimes you may not be able to see the person as regularly as we used to because that's how you had to see people?
Well, I think a lot of it has to do with the value proposition of the networks themselves. You know, there's a lot of research that indicates people are very accepting of ratings and evaluations from their social networks, more so than they are other traditional sources of ratings, because they've interacted with these individuals on a daily basis. They've almost gotten to know them without line of sight, but through a trusted information sharing and knowledge sharing environment. So I think that's the difference, is we're creating engagement, participation around a value proposition that's important to me. And I am interacting with individuals that have a great deal of expertise and knowledge and bring value to me. And I think that's the key to a trusted relationship.
And Afia, how do trusted relationships get built in the FDA and how do you sustain them?
I mean, I think we're using the transparency initiative and this push to be more open as a means to kind of build credibility and trust in what the agency does. If the public has a better understanding of why we approve or don't approve a drug, for example, or why we are recommending that you use or do not use this particular product, we think that kind of builds trust and credibility in all the decisions that we make. We are also just trying to be more transparent in the work that we do. I mean, you mentioned earlier the dashboards that we put online. The initiative is called FDA Track, and it's a performance management system. It's a means for people to go online and see how quickly we're approving a drug application, for example. All of this information that has direct relevance in terms of people's day-to-day lives, they'll be able to like go online and see how the FDA is doing on that particular measure. And we're not only putting this information up, I think this goes to what Gerald also said in terms of knowledge management, we're using this information.
But is this also working internally across FDA for that trust, not just with the public, but with one another?
Yes, definitely. FDA is a big organization. I mean, it's a big organization that does a lot of different important things in terms of promoting the public health. And being transparent not only is important for the public to have a better understanding of what you do, but your colleagues and FDA employees to have a good understanding of what we do. I do want to say, in terms of the FDA track, not only is this an opportunity for the public to have a good sense of what we're doing, but for FDA to have a good sense of where we are and what we're doing. So as part of the performance management system, these metrics are kept on a monthly basis, on a quarterly basis. There'll be meetings with Dr. Sharfstein, who's the principal deputy commissioner, and Commissioner Hamburg, and other folks that do that work on a day-to-day basis to see where we are and what we need to do to get better. So transparency and technology, we think, is just a great opportunity for us to do our work in a more effective way.
We were speaking with Gerald Charles Jr. of Cisco, Dave McClure of the GSA, and Afia Asmoa of the FDA. And this is the Cisco's panel on the Future of Public Sector Workforce and Workplace Sustainability series on the changing state of public sector collaboration and associated operations. here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. We're going to take a short break and we'll return to the discussion in just a couple of moments. I'm Tom Temin.
Headed to Fort Detrick or the I-270 Technology Corridor, Federal News Radio can be heard crystal clear on 820 AM in Frederick, Maryland. It's the same great station, just on an added frequency. Get the latest news about the federal government and government contractors. Hear exclusive interviews with the movers and shakers in the federal arena. Federal News Radio, 1500 AM or 820 AM in Frederick, Maryland. Federal News Radio, your source for federal news now.
There's a new show in town for the connected, curious, and innovative. Chris Dorabeck hosts the brand new Dorabeck Insider, weekdays from 3 to 7 on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Only Chris has the energy and the Rolodex to bring you inside the decision-making that changes your workday. He challenges conventional wisdom by asking his high-profile guests about what worked and what didn't. The Dorabeck Insider is information sharing on the radio in the government 2.0 world. The Dorabeck Insider, weekday afternoons from 3 to 7 only on Federal News Radio 1500 AM.
Welcome back to Cisco's The Future of Public Sector Workforce and Workspace Sustainability, a series of discussions on the changing state of public sector collaboration and associated operations here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. I'm Tom Temin. Our guests today are Gerald Charles Jr. He's Executive Advisor to the Public Sector Group at Cisco Systems, and Dave McClure, Associate Administrator in GSA's Office of Citizen Services and Communications, and Afia Asamoah, Special Assistant to the Principal Deputy Commissioner at the Food and Drug Administration. And folks, just before the break, we were talking about this idea of collaboration and working within your team. Another dimension in the way work must be sustained today is the idea of mobility. I think the workforce is way more mobile in so many ways than ever before. Gerald, tell us what that means and how that's affecting sustainability of the workplace as you see it.
Well, that's exactly right, Tom. In today's world, we're all over the place. We're not just in the factory floor or in, as I've said, the ivory tower of the office building. At any point in the day, we could be anywhere in any region. And as important, our teams could be anywhere in any place. So mobility is really recognizing, you know, where you physically are or where your workspace, again, physically are, as well as recognizing where your teams are. And that's not just your internal work teams, that's also your customers or citizens and the people that you have to deliver services to. Our population is as mobile. And I know that both Afia and Dave have to deal with that issue specifically. So mobility also reflects how do you get the information that those people need or that you or your workers need wherever they are, and how do you get it to them in the format that they can use to actually make decisions? Because when you're on the road or when you're working with your PDA or smartphone versus at your desktop or laptop, how you can view information, interact with it is very, very different. So mobility must really take that into account too.
And Afia, how do you find that to work? The idea that you're all over the place, you and your coworkers, you can't carry a PC around everywhere, or do you? What does mobility mean in terms of how you're equipped, but also how you work?
Mobility from our perspective has an impact both internally and externally. Internally, FDA has inspectors, investigators, both stationed everywhere from California to DC, as well as internationally, as I mentioned before, with our international offices. It's extremely critical for all the information that people are seeing on the ground to translate to the information that we're actually seeing in headquarters in Washington, DC. In terms of externally, not only do we want to get that information from the folks on the ground to inform the decisions that we're making on a day-to-day basis, we also want to effectively get information out to the public in an accessible, useful, and understandable way. As part of the transparency initiative, we've been thinking more creatively in terms of how we could get information out to the public. The first thing we did is that we held a couple of public meetings to solicit comments from the public in terms of how we can improve transparency. And we wanted to do a broad call for comments. We thought it was really important to hear from the mom that uses information, infant formula, for example, in Michigan, as well as big industry that makes the products that we use every day. We got a lot of comments that people found it very difficult if we held the physical meeting in D.C., folks could not come and engage with agency folks and give us comments. And so we started webcasting those meetings. And we got extremely great feedback from the public, appreciation that we actually made a step forward in terms of trying to make that information accessible. And from our perspective, it was helpful because we were able to archive and keep that information on our website. We've also tried to, on a more regular basis, get information out to the public. So as part of the Transparency Initiative, we launched in January what we're calling FDA Basics. And it's basically a web page that provides basic information about what the FDA does. It gives people understanding in terms of what our investigators in the field does. It gives us gives people a sense of how we actually approve a drug that they use. When they hear in the news that we're recalling something, people will have a better understanding in terms of what that means and how that decision is made. And as part of that series, every month, we're doing webinars. So it's an opportunity for people to hear basic information about the agency. For example, we did one on the inspection process. We're doing one on indoor tanning. And it's an opportunity for people to kind of put a face to the bureaucracy.
A tan face.
Get a more informed view in terms of what people do every day to regulate these products and provides very basic information.
Okay, Dave, at the GSA, there's been kind of a march over the years. I mean, your office, Citizens Services and Communications, has everything from Pueblo, Colorado, where you still mail pamphlets to people through the regular U.S. Postal Service, because there's still a demand for that, and more recently the USA.gov effort, which has been evolving. And increasingly, I think it's dawning on GSA, or GSA is realizing that people want information in a mobile fashion. So how is GSA configuring its offerings, both, I guess, to the federal government, but also to the citizens, that takes into account increasing mobility?
Yeah, it's a very important topic, and we have to do two things. One, we have to integrate our service delivery offerings to citizens across those channels, the traditional USA.gov, the contact center, the print publications. We should be delivering content uniformly across those channels in a seamless way, which is something we're working on. But it's the interactive environment, both through the web and through mobile apps, that I think is the future. And we're actually focusing a lot of attention right now on building a mobile apps platform for government where we can actually deliver services to citizens on their terms when they're walking down the street, in the taxi cab, at school, whatever. That's when people will actually want service, whether they're waiting, looking for wait times at airports, to the latest food safety recall, to something dealing with a catastrophe or pending weather information. This is all government data. So our challenge is actually trying to get this information weaved together and deliver it in a very mobile society, real time, on terms that citizens actually find very convenient.
So that sounds like the ultimate in transparency and also new work systems. People could go to apps.gov eventually, right? Is that the model to be able to download? You know, there's an app for that, meaning a federal function.
Yeah, I mean, we're putting the model together. There are already mobile apps that are being built by agencies. What we're trying to do is to create a very easy pick menu for citizens simply to find those applications. Some of them are still buried on web pages. Some of them are on some of the provider sites, the iPhone or the Droid. We just need more visibility, more transparency into how those services are actually moving to that mobile environment.
Tom, if I could really highlight two important points that both Dave and Afi really made. Dave mentioned the mobility platform. And Afi, in essence, talked about mobility as an infrastructure and the way they deliver information and services. Those are two things that really go to a mobility strategy or the mobility dimension that we're talking about.
Okay, and I wanted to ask you also, Gerald, about the idea of teaming and confidence. We've been talking about collaboration, and of course, mobility in many ways drives people apart physically. Maybe they're offset in time as well as in distance. And that brings into the idea of who you collaborate with. And you also have the concept of the trusted network, which is really much more than your own work group or your immediate teammates. Describe that whole concept and what it means for work and collaboration and transparency.
It is. The trusted knowledge network, as we call it, really brings into play the fact that your team, who you work with now most of the time, or upwards of 85% of the time, always needs to be with you and kind of on and available. those trusted online communities. So if you think about maybe your special interest groups, your user groups, your associations, all of those are a part of who you are and how you deliver work. And so that trusted knowledge network, kind of getting the person who really knows the right information to the person that needs to know that information, that's what the trusted knowledge network or that dimension is all about. And that's really now encompassing more and more in the work world by thinking about the kind of enterprise class Facebook or LinkedIn, you know, a secure environment, much to what GSA is really building and delivering for the entire government. And then that goes to the heart of openness and transparency. You need kind of secure openness and transparency of your team to allow your teams to work together no matter where they are mobility-wise, having the confidence to make those individual decisions.
I think we're talking about Fed space, and of course that gets to the issue of transparency within the government, because that's one of the biggest problems is people in government trying to find the correct expert or the person that can help you. It might be in a different agency, might be in a different continent. So tell us a little bit about that and how that plays into this whole transparency picture, Fed space.
Right. Well, it's still in the works, so nothing has been built nor delivered yet. We're still in the conceptual phases of trying to understand what it is we do need to deliver internally in the government. But it's obvious in this world that we're in that we need some collaboration space government-wide in terms of profiles, in terms of networks building organized communities of practice that are truly online, able to work and share information dynamically, access 24 hours a day. So we're building that platform to try to create that connectivity across government, because a lot of times your trusted network is outside of your agency, particularly as these missions of government transcend organizational lines. So I think FedSpace is an opportunity for us to see how we can build these organized online communities, very agile, that can organize and actually come to bear on specific needs, specific projects, specific challenges, and either stay in place or disband. This is not something that we're trying to create a new informal government. We're just simply trying to empower information sharing, access, and collaboration.
And Afi, at FDA, there have been some recent incidents of foodborne illnesses where there's been a lot of interagency cooperation. Sometimes you might need agriculture's help, sometimes, you know, other components of health and human services. And so these the transparency dashboards that you're building and the whole mobility picture and collaboration, is that increasingly coming together so that teams that need to be put together, I guess you could call them trusted networks, for a particular situation, salmonella here, some kind of outbreak of a food poisoning there, whatever it might be, does that coming together, is that something that FDA is looking for increasingly as it responds to what's going on in this case, the food or drug supply?
Right. Working with, as you said, other operatives within Department of Health and Human Services has always been very critical and important to our work. Food situation, for example, working with CDC and USDA, depending on what food it is extremely helpful in terms of getting critical information quickly and making decisions based on that information and sharing that with the public. The FedSpace idea sounds like an excellent one. Always looking for more efficient, easier, quicker ways of getting information and sharing information. And that type of platform sounds like it would be extremely helpful to the work that
FDA does. And I also wanted to ask you, too, about the state and local governments and health agencies, because those are part of the trusted network, if you will, for FDA. And tell us how that works and how it's evolving.
As we said, we have investigators on the ground. State and local governments are extremely helpful because, again, they're on the ground and they get information that we may not hear for a couple of weeks, months, etc. Working with state and local governments are important not only for receiving information but also distributing information. And working with state and local governments to do that is extremely helpful. So I think that you would qualify them as part of our trusted network, and we're always looking for ways to work more closely with them.
And comment, Gerald?
Yes, Tom, you and Afi have really hit upon a key capability that we're also seeing in describing mobility, and that's something called presence, which is really understanding the status, state, and preferences of someone before you initiate contact. So if you think about in your example with the FDA, when you may have to quickly respond to a foodborne illness, a salmonella breakout, how do you pull that team together, maybe at HHS as well as at FDA? How do you then get that information out to maybe the team who that may be, say, out in California or something? So research has also shown that 1/3 to 40% of the time when we actually try and reach someone, we don't. So despite this incredible, you know, communications innovation that we have, do I call the cell phone, the work phone, the pager? How do I make contact with them? We actually lose a lot of productivity with that. Presence overcomes that. So if you understand kind of where somebody is, are they, do you reach them by cell phone versus do you reach them in their office? And they say, do they even want to be reached or does it go right away to voicemail? If you could know all that when you first reached out, that would overcome that 1/3 to 40% productivity loss. And so it's a great example of kind of where FDA is going in your comment, which really highlights that.
And there must be some technological underpinnings that can support that knowledge of the presence of other people.
There is. In fact, that's very important in understanding how you deliver a mobility, you know, solution and how that's incorporated into your mobility strategy.
And Dave, how does that work at GSA, or does it work? I mean, what are you finding when you reach out to people and you want to touch someone and they're not there? Does that slow things down?
Well, I think we're still in both the physical and a virtual work world, so it's not one or the other. I think we're learning how to transition to a virtual workplace in the government with increased velocity every day. Remember, one of the cornerstones of the Open Government Directive is innovation. So we do need to focus on how technology is forwarding the ability of government to get its work done and deliver services to citizens in a very creative and innovative way. So the more we can demonstrate how mobility and connectivity not only helps us save dollars in terms of travel cost, physically putting people in office spaces, for example, it also creates this challenge of performance. It's no longer as important where I am, it's what I'm doing. And we actually will, I think, the meter turned up on actual performance as a result of this.
And we're going to talk about performance in a lot of detail coming up. But I wanted to stick on that issue for just a minute about the collaboration and the idea of presence and reaching people. Can social media enable an increase in productivity that you mentioned is lost from the traditional way of calling someone and they're not there? You may not get the answer immediately, but you can get it without as much effort, and maybe somehow there's less friction in that interaction than there is with repeated phone tag.
Yes, and you are starting to see these presence capabilities or characteristics being integrated into technology. When you're online, and can you tell if your team is online or who on your team is online? And if they are online, how do I connect with them? Can I initiate a chat session? Should I, you know, send them a text message? Can I make a telephone call? So that presence capability is more and more being integrated into applications and into mobility strategies. And we know we're seeing that the more advanced, innovative organizations are making that a key part of their strategy.
And Afia, if you're you, or say the person you support, Dr. Sharfstein, how do you get any time to think if everyone knows they can interrupt you with a tweet, with a poke, with a phone call, or whatever?
I mean, I think it's a balance. I mean, you do want to get this information. I think it's really important to hear from a range of stakeholders and coalesce all this information. But at the same time, you do need time to kind of review the information and deliberately review it and make efficient decisions based on the information. I think from our perspective, we're still exploring social media. Certain of the centers have tweets, you know, and they have followers, and so they food recalls and recall information is pushed out to the public that way, and we are increasingly getting more people subscribing to that. I think we see social media at this point, the pendulum has not swung too far in the other direction. It's an opportunity for us. It's an opportunity for us to get information out quickly. We're finding that a lot of our social media, the information we put out on social media through blogs and tweets, become rival. More people get that information quickly. And from our perspective, that's extremely important because people need that information to make good healthcare decisions.
And just to get to a very basic technology question, we have a multiplicity of devices nowadays. People have laptop computers and they have smartphones, and sometimes they have several computers. They just don't have one. And that's getting to be a bigger issue on where information is when you actually need it, which gets us to the idea of the state not being on your machine, but being somewhere, well, I'll say it, in the cloud. And Gerald, are we finding this is something that's increasingly important in this whole open environment and this sustainability of workplace environment?
It is, you know, where we house information and knowledge, and then how we access it and the services that we access it with is quite a bit being talked about in the trust cloud. I don't want to speak for Dave and GSA because I know they're doing some significant work there and really looking at what does that mean for government. But the trust cloud is becoming more and more real, so you can deliver those services and not be bound by 3 and 4 and 5 and 6 devices and email addresses and so forth.
Can't do it all on thumb drives either. We're speaking with Gerald Charles Jr. He is with Cisco, Dave McClure at GSA, Afia Asamoah, and she is with the Food and Drug Administration. You're listening to Cisco's The Future of Public Sector Workforce and Workplace Sustainability, a series of discussions on the changing state of public sector collaboration and associated operations here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. We're going to take a short commercial break and finish the discussion when we come back. I'm Tom Temin.
Wake up and drive in with Tom Temin and Amy Morris on the Federal Drive. It's your early line on the day ahead from your trusted advisors. Tom and Amy give you a full view of the issues. Find out what your colleagues in other agencies are up to and what policy and congressional developments mean to you. The Federal Drive with Tom Temin and Amy Morris. Weekday mornings from 6 to 10 on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Looking for usable news and information that helps you do your job? Tune into In-Depth with Francis Rose every weekday afternoon from 1 to 3 on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Francis explores the relationship between agencies and Congress by taking you to the hearing rooms on Capitol Hill and asking questions of federal decision makers and experts. You'll get a firsthand look at how Congress affects your agency's personnel, funding, and oversight. In-Depth also looks at the relationship between agencies and contractors, companies that do billions of dollars of business with the federal government. Talk about the work they're doing for agencies, the work they're bidding on, and the work they didn't get. And In-Depth will help you be a better manager. Francis talks to authors, scholars, and managerial experts about managing projects, managing your workforce, and managing yourself. In-Depth with Francis Rose, every weekday afternoon from 1 to 3 on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Welcome back to Cisco's The Future of Public Sector Workforce and Workplace Sustainability, a series of discussions on the changing state of public sector collaboration and associated operations here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. I'm Tom Temin. Our guests today are Gerald Charles Jr., Executive Advisor to the Public Sector at Cisco Systems, Dave McClure, Associate Administrator of the GSA's Office of Citizen Services and Communications, and Afia Asamoah, Special Assistant to the Principal Deputy Commissioner at the Food and Drug Administration. And we've been talking about openness, we've been talking about transparency, and we've been talking about the fact that the Openness Directive requires agencies to apply technological solutions to increasing the culture of transparency and openness. But there's another element that is being demanded by the administration and by the American people, I think, really, and that's performance. At some point, this has to result in better mission delivery of what we're doing here in the federal government. And so how does the issue of transparency, how does sustainability of work ultimately support performance? Gerald?
It's a great question, because I think what's happening here is we're having a perfect storm. You've got all these different factors and the complexities that we've just spent the past few minutes talking about, but it's really a perfect storm of opportunity to drive performance. And that's performance, we believe, in three particular areas. One, obviously, is in the area of kind of cost or finance. The second is in the area of green or sustainability. And the third is in the area of service delivery, both internally, the productivity of the workforce, and externally in terms of the services that you deliver. Excuse me. Another way to maybe think about that is we think there are four questions that, you know, the public and agencies are really asking, you know, of everyone. If, you know, we want to do this, or should we do this? And that's one, government is looking to, how do you deliver results with a very mobile and dispersed population and workforce? The second is, how do we find and collaborate with all these people, places, and things, the skills and expertise that we need? The third is, how do we then apply this collective knowledge to speed the results that we're looking for? And fourth, all of that is really balanced, you know, or you try and harmonize that with cost, because government agencies also are stewards of our resources, you know, and of our funding. So how do they do all that and then actually keep the workforce, you know, engaged and very innovative?
And Dave, I guess GSA is trying to help agency answer those kinds of questions. Tell us how that applies.
Well, I think, you know, again, one of the cornerstones of the Open Government Directive is transparency. We've been talking about that. This puts performance information out publicly, quickly, into the hands of citizens to review. It's a game-changing environment that we're in. In the past, government has held performance information internally. It's reported it in terms that it felt was beneficial. Now we're trying to get information up on public websites as fast as possible. So it does create an opportunity for us in that we can illustrate how government performance is working extremely well. So there's a lot of interest at GSA in building what we're starting to call citizen service delivery dashboards, which are really focused on operational delivery to citizens in terms that make that have meaning to them. How long do I have to wait in line for service X? What's the quality of service that I'm getting from a particular agency? So it's not to replace programmatic outcomes or dashboards, but it's just to think about a citizen on their own terms. What would they be interested in from government? The other thing I think that's happening is that we're seeing, as a result of the transparency and the result of this focus on performance in a very dynamic state that we have via Web 2.0 tools, is a renewed interest in problem solving. So as we see service delivery issues, as we see information inconsistencies, rather than excuses, I think we want to focus the energy of government on problem solving to fix those as fast as possible.
And of course, the performance depends on what the agency mission is. And Afia, let's talk about FDA. How are, probably in more than one way, but how do you define performance, and when do you know you're where you should be?
Well, the focus, as Commissioner Hamburg has said since the first day as commissioner, is that we are a public health agency. And so at the end of the day, everything we do needs to promote or protect the public health. And part of this is getting good information to patients, to healthcare providers, to people who use the products, so they can make informed decisions about the products that they're using. One step in which we're trying to get this information out are these dashboards that we launched, unveiled last month, called FDA Track. It's an opportunity for people that are interested in the day-to-day work of the agency to see how we're doing on metrics. And as David said, it's an opportunity for us to use those analytics to problem solve. So you'll see that our target is to approve a drug in a certain amount of time. You'll see that we'll hit that target 90% of the time, for example. And it's an opportunity for us to kind of look with kind of a laser beam to see why we're not meeting that target 100% of the time and make tweaks to the process to make sure that we're improving the services that we're doing on a day-to-day basis.
But it can get pretty deep, too, because say the dashboard is out there and it tells how long it takes to approve a drug, and mm-hmm. people are judging you by that. You could easily fix that. You could approve every drug in one day, but then right. it could kill everybody.
Right.
So, I mean, there's multiple dimensions to performance.
There are multiple dimensions, although I can confidently say that we would not do that.
Well, I think we're all relieved to hear
everyone
that.
Everyone could take a deep breath. I think with respect to the dashboards, this is a work in progress for us. I mean, if you go on the FDA website and actually look at the dashboards, you'll see that we're soliciting feedback. We want to hear from the public in terms of whether this is helpful. We do think that it's very important because people use the products that we regulate, that they have a good sense of how we're doing it and how we're making our decisions. I think the process will be tweaked as we go along, but we didn't feel that it was enough reason to withhold the information at this point. We felt that we should get the information out there, and we'll hear from the public and see what we need to do to actually improve the processes.
I think what Afia says implies something that you've described, and that is the five dimensions of work that support performance. Give us a little bit more on that, Gerald.
Yes. Yeah, so if you think about the different characteristics of work and openness and transparency in government and driving the specific performance outcomes that we just talked about, I think the next question, as you're saying, Tom, is, so how do you do that? You know, as an organization, how can I really figure out the right strategy and then make the right investment to achieve the returns we've talked about? And so we've characterized and built this model based upon these five dimensions. The dimension of confidence, as we talked about a little bit earlier, the dimension of mobility, the dimension of the trusted knowledge network. And there's two other dimensions we didn't touch as much upon. One is the connected workplace. So again, going to that theme of the work environment is as much about driving productivity and innovation. And then the secure borderless enterprise, that's the last dimension, which really allows you to kind of connect your resources, people, places, and things no matter where you are. So we think those five dimensions now really characterize work and what work means in the knowledge economy or in the 21st century. And then corresponding with that, you know, well, how do I implement that? What are the solutions that go along with that? So for example, for the first three that we talked about, in the case of confidence, I mean, that could still be a very kind of fuzzy word. How do I actually drive confidence? Well, that's actually driven by a rich media or video strategy, because this video is really here, and video is allowing us to use all of the human senses to drive decision-making. The second in the
Not smell.
Well, right, yet. Not smell yet.
Someday.
Yeah, though there is virtual smell going on, too, or a lot of research. The second ear in mobility is more than just wireless connectivity. It's a number of the things that both Avia and Dave talked about, and including the concept of presence, you know, that I had talked about earlier. And then the third is this entrusted knowledge network is enterprise class, secure, Facebook or LinkedIn, or much to the mobility platform that Dave mentioned as a part of how they're delivering their services. So also think about there are real tangible solutions that businesses can make business case-based investment to drive very specific performance outcomes and understand, if I do this, what can I expect and how can I report that back out to the public?
And Dave, that sounds like kind of the sweet spot for GSA, which is the provider of all these enabling technologies for these kinds of collaborative environments that we're building. And also you're leading the way in openness just by the activities of your own Office of Citizen Services and Communications. So where do we go from here? What do you see ahead in the next year?
Well, I think we have to make sure that, you know, agencies have access to the kinds of technologies that they need and services they need to move to this virtual workplace environment and to work and to move into an open and transparent type of government that we're talking about. So GSA is very much into providing collaboration platforms and also service delivery platforms that are conducive to citizens' needs. It's a challenging environment, I think, that we're in. Gerald mentioned this earlier. We're in a three-screen world right now. When I present information to a citizen, I have to think about where they are when they are actually receiving that information. Is it on a mobile device, which has a very small screen, which limits your ability to do interaction? Is it on a netbook or a PC? Or are they sitting in their living room at home in front of a 50-inch plasma television, which gives me endless opportunities to display information in very unique ways? So we have to think this through very carefully in terms of what our communication strategies are in this world that's moving toward heavy collaboration, more communication, and a lot of video.
And we'll give you the last word, Afia. Does that sound like what the FDA is moving toward?
Definitely. We see transparency and openness in government as a way to enhance our ability to effectively do our mission, which is to promote and protect the public health. So to the extent that we can use platforms and innovative ways to do that, that's definitely what we're looking to do.
Well, it's been a fascinating discussion. I want to thank you all for participating and bringing some really great thinking to it. We've been speaking with Gerald Charles, Jr. He's executive advisor in the public sector unit at Cisco Systems, to Dave McClure, the associate administrator of the GSA's Office of Citizen Services and Communications, and to Afia Asmoah. She's special assistant to the principal deputy commissioner at the Food and Drug Administration. And we thank you for listening to Cisco's panel discussion on the future of public sector workforce and workplace sustainability, the changing state of public sector collaboration and associated operations, here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. I'm your host, Tom Temin. And to hear this show in its entirety and to get more information, just go to federalnewsradio.com, keyword work.